Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke. Welcome to Parkside Today. It's a pleasure to have as our guest Christina Clemens. Christina is UW Parkside's Director of Scholarships and Financial Aid. Christina, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the big news coming out of UW Parkside in the last week has been the Parkside Promise Plus.
Yes.
And this is a tuition-free and student support program that was just announced last week by UW Parkside. I want to talk a little bit about that. I also want to talk a little bit about just the financial aid side, maybe some of the things that as you interact with people in the community, prospective students coming in, their families coming in, things that they understand, maybe things that they don't always understand and maybe should. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about Christina.
Okay. I'm the Director of Scholarships and Financial Aid here. I've been in financial aid for 12 years, so I did 4 years at a private school before coming here. Started here as a counselor and then became director in 2010. Hmm. Personally, I've got two little kiddos. I have a four-year-old and a seven-month-old, so apologize for a raspy voice. I caught their daycare cold, so it's a little bit of a struggle today. But, a boy and a girl, a lot of fun. Keep me on my toes.
Great, yeah. So we'll jump back to the Parkside Promise Plus. Mm-hmm. It is a program that is designed to help, let's say, bridge the gap between what a student may be able to have in terms of federal grants and state grants, and then bridging that gap. What are federal grants? What are state grants for someone who's saying, okay, I don't even know if I qualify for those or what those might be?
Sure. So I think what most people think of when they think of federal and state grants is the FAFSA. So a lot of students, when they come to our office, they'll say, where's my FAFSA money? And that's part of what that is. So the FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid, for those who don't know. Mm-hmm. And when a student completes it, it looks at things like income, assets, the number in the family, the number that are going to college, all sorts of those types of things, to determine what kind of federal and state aid a student may qualify for. Mm-hmm. So one of those items would be grants, and those are the things that students don't have to repay. So when people think of that, the most common that they think of would probably be the federal Pell Grant. That's the one that you always hear about in the news. So that's kind of the big button one.
Sure.
But it also includes loans and includes the federal work study program as well. So the state grants, same thing. It's completion of the FAFSA, and it looks at the same criteria that the Pell Grant does to determine eligibility. So income, assets, those types of things.
Sure. So there, the grants are something that the student is not repaying.
Correct.
Versus, let's say, a loan, and you're looking at those things, and now here comes Parkside Promise Plus to be able to help bridge that gap. What are some of the things that are involved with the Promise Plus in terms of, in addition to here is financial support, there's also some student support that's part of that program?
Right. So besides this being a tool to help make college more affordable for students, we really envision it as being a retention program as well. So making sure that the students not only can afford to go here, but have the support that they need to make sure that they can be successful here. So things like just having the students come early before they start school so that they can form this new group of friends and feel really invested with the campus. Each student will be assigned a financial aid counselor so that they have a name that they can talk to. They can reach out with questions. We will reach out to them as well to be like, hey, don't forget to apply for scholarships, or we see that you want to take a course in summer. Let's talk about what that cost looks like, things like that. So that'll be an option for them. They'll have options too to participate in campus activities just like any other student would, but they're all also going to be taking seminar courses so that they can learn a little bit more about the college experience, be a little bit more invested into the campus. So I'm sure I'm forgetting things, but it's been such a whirlwind the past couple of weeks that those are the big ones that stick out for me.
Okay. And you've been involved in the process for quite some time in terms of taking a look at who... trying to estimate who may have qualified, the number of students may have qualified, what sort of there is a financial consideration on the part of the university, what that might take a look like or what that might look like. Going back to that planning process, if you look back to the previous year or so, how many students did you see that, you know, that may have qualified?
Yeah, so when we first ran the numbers, it was like 185, but of those, only about 70 actually came to Parkside.
Oh, like someone who applied,
right,
but then actually enrolled.
Right, yeah. Some of them were students who applied but then didn't end up coming.
Right.
And who knows, maybe finances were one of those reasons. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this program can help bridge that gap for students.
Sure, sure.
Hopefully.
And when students and their families come to you and start talking about financial aid, mm-hmm. scholarships, do you find that is there a misconception or a misunderstanding of what possibly it could cost them to
yes.
attend a university?
There's a lot of misunderstandings about both how financial aid works and what the costs to come to school are. One of the bigger misconceptions we see is that, well, there's quite a few, but one of the bigger ones is that people assume they're not going to qualify for anything. They'll say, well, my parents make too much, or they just assume their parents make too much. But there are some aid programs that don't depend as heavily on earnings. And you also have to think, too, that one of the components of the FAFSA looks at the number in family. So the example that I give to people is, if you have a family of two living off $60,000 a year, they're much more able to afford college than a family of five living off $60,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they see that income number and just assume that it disqualifies them when it really doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big misconception. One of the other misconceptions is that financial aid is going to pay for every cost that the student has while they're in school.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the case for some students, but in general, people typically do have some form of out-of-pocket or need to take some form of loans if they don't have the funds up front to pay for courses. So
mm-hmm.
it's definitely one of the bigger misconceptions. I know I had that when I went to school, and then when we got offered loans, I was like, what do you mean? Where's my grants? So, yeah.
Right. What about the timing? You know, when you
mm-hmm.
see, sooner is always better,
yes.
right? Right, from the time that you're applying or taking a look at those things, do you find that that's something that people need some understanding or awareness on?
Yeah, it seems that freshmen and seniors are generally the best about turning things in early. The freshmen, because they're getting a lot of pressure in high school of, you need to do this, you need to do that, you know, people always watching over their shoulders. Sophomores seem to forget about the process until the last second, and so sophomores and juniors tend to do things a little bit later than they should.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that early is better is that we've got some funds that are given to the school up front, and we just spread the love as much as we can, and then when it's out, it's out. So
yeah, yeah.
The earlier that you can apply, the better.
Okay. How about the when we get into the loan side of the equation, we mm-hmm. talked a little bit about the grant side. Loans are certainly something that can help a student or a student's family pay for a college, university education to get them. What are some of the things people need to know about loans or have a pretty good focus on heading into that?
Oh, sure. Any loan that comes through the FAFSA, so the federal loans, are the best kind of loans typically that students can take because they have fixed interest rates. So the student doesn't have to worry about it bouncing around over time.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the more generous repayment options for students where they can extend how long they have to repay, or they can change their due date if they're having struggles doing it on the first or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So those are generally the best loans for students to take. There are other loans that students can take that aren't through the federal government called private loans. And students just need to be cautious with those because they do look at credit. And so sometimes the rates can be a little bit higher because a lot of students don't have very good credit or don't have very established credit yet.
Mm.
Or they may have variable interest rates where it might look really great at first, but by the time they go into repayment, it could be much higher.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
whenever students have questions about loans, they should just come and talk to us and we can kind of give them ideas of what their best options are.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to there's always going to be the repayment part of that. Is it possible for students that when they come to you, let's say as a freshman, or maybe it's a transfer student coming in as a junior, can you give them a pretty good idea of, okay, if you move through here in 4 years or 4.5 years, you could expect to see this type of this mm-hmm. amount that needs to be repaid, or this kind of monthly amount that needs to be
yeah.
repaid?
Totally. There's actually a website. It's studentaid.ed.gov. It's the Department of Ed website. So pretty much anything you need to know about federal aid is listed there somewhere. But they have a repayment estimator. So when we have students who are concerned about how much they've borrowed to date or they're trying to project forward, they can go in and fill that out with estimated information to see what repayment would look like. It's actually a really cool tool. It shows all the different repayment options that'll be available to the student, how much additional interest that might generate versus not, and kind of the pros and cons of each of the repayment options. So it's actually really neat.
How many do you find people that when they're coming into you, I mean, Parkside is, and I sure hope I do this right, offers the lowest tuition of the four-year comprehensive universities in the UW system. And do you find that people may not completely understand how that a UW Parkside education can be pretty affordable?
I think yes. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the things that's tricky is that by law, we as financial aid administrators are required to offer students the maximum loan that they qualify for. And so sometimes students get the perception that maybe that means they need to take all of that when they really don't. So there's a lot of us trying to educate students about just because it's out there doesn't mean you need it. Right. Don't use it if you don't need to.
Yeah.
So that's certainly one thing. The other thing is that we're also required to show students what their estimated, what's called cost of attendance would be. And the cost of attendance is more than just what the student will pay on their bill. So it's more than tuition and segregated fees. It's more than housing, all of that. It includes estimates for things like transportation. So what we think you may spend driving to and from home if you're commuting, things like that. So it makes the costs look far more inflated than what they actually are. So, again, we try to educate students on just because you see this as the cost of attendance, don't think that that's actually what you're going to owe. Because it's a much higher number than what it will actually be.
Okay. As a person who now is directing scholarships and financial aid here at UW Parkside, how much do you find yourself needing to be, I don't want to say expert in, but certainly up to date on what's going on with finances in the United States in terms of like banks and the prime rate and things like that? Do you see yourself as someone who needs to understand that pretty clearly?
I probably should. So a lot of our stuff is regulated by the Department of Education. So we get a lot of information through our national association, the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. That's a mouthful. It's NASFA.
Okay.
So if there is something that impacts the way we're going to do business or the way students are going to see things like student loan interest rates, origination fees, stuff like that, they'll let us know ahead of time so we can educate people on that. We do watch market rates, though, because what's been interesting this year compared to prior years is there's one federal loan that parents can take for students, but the interest rate's kind of high. So this is the first year that we've seen it flip between more students taking private loans than parents taking Parent Plus loans. And I think it's because of that interest rate. So things like that we have to kind of keep an eye on just so we know, okay, why are we trending so high in this loan and so low in that one? Now we know why.
Oh, okay. And your colleagues throughout the UW system that do what you do, how often do you rely on one another for, oh, here's something that's working here, or here's a way we can put this package together for students?
All the time. That works in financial aid in the UW system, we all use the same system. So Solar, PeopleSoft, it's all the same system at each school. So if one school thinks of a cool way to do something, we all share that information. And the laws that regulate financial aid change sometimes multiple times per year. So it's hard to keep up with. And we use each other as like a sounding board of, hey, this law changed. What are you guys doing? And what best practice do you have for this? So that not only are we being consistent across the board, so if students transfer, they're not confused, but so that we're being consistent across the state so that we all, you know, if we get audited, we're all doing the same thing. Hopefully.
Sure. Yeah. How did you know, or as a person who's going through your education, how did you know that this was something that you wanted to pursue?
I would would say I did. I wanted to go into higher education.
Okay.
I love working with students. And I've always been, as my mom would tell you, a rule follower. I love policy, which is weird. And I love reading regulations, which is even weirder, I think. But this is kind of a nice marriage of the two. I get to still have that student contact and help students be successful by making sure they can afford to go here. While at the same time, I get to satisfy that like nerdy policy side of myself. But a lot in spreadsheets.
But that's, I would think, if I was a student or a parent coming to you and talking to you about financial aid, especially on the, maybe even more so on the loan side, I think I would certainly want someone who understands the policy and the regulations.
Yes. Yeah. And we have to, so that we can explain that to families as best we can. Because sometimes, admittedly, they don't always make sense to us, or we don't always think that they're fair, but we have to at least be able to explain that and why the policy exists.
Sure.
One of those being like male students, in order to qualify for financial aid, have to be registered with Selective Service. Still.
Yeah,
and it's because the law was written in like 1965.
Well,
no one's ever changed it. So even though a draft doesn't exist, males are still required to register with Selective Service. So it's just one of those random things that we have to explain to people. And a lot of times moms especially get pretty mad about that one.
Yeah. And I learned something today.
I'm glad I gave you some knowledge.
If someone would have said to me, do you think that a person has to register for the Selective Service? My answer would have been, no, they don't. The draft doesn't exist.
If they want federal aid, they do.
Wow.
Yep.
Interesting. How about you've got a number of people in your office who are doing the same kind of things you're doing.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about your staff and where when you're putting a team together, where do you see or how do you look at their particular expertise or their strengths to build that team?
Oh, sure. Well, I think one of the most important aspects of our job, and whenever we interview someone to work in our office, is being able to present, because we present in the community and on campus actually pretty often. I think last year we did something like 55 presentations, which is probably more than people would expect.
Yeah.
So having the ability to present, and also having the ability to explain really complicated regulations in a way that is understandable, is very important. So that's probably one of the biggest traits. And just being, you know, personable, because we do see students that are sometimes in very difficult situations. So it's not uncommon to have someone who yells or cries or hands the phone to mom who yells, you know, whatever it might be. So being able to have that patience and understanding, and also be able to explain why we can or can't do things, that's really important. Everyone on our team also has to be pretty detail-oriented, because we have so many regulations and things like that that we have to follow.
Sure.
So that's a big skill set to have. Not everyone loves regulations as much as me and a few others in the office do, and that's okay. You don't have to be a big policy nerd to want to work in financial aid, because there's a lot of the handholding, reaching out into the community side of it too. So there's a number of different skill sets that I think would work in our office. We get asked a lot, like, were you a math major? And I don't think any of us were. So we have a history major. I was a psychology major. One person was law. I don't know what Heather was, business, I believe. So we have an art major. So there's a lot of different areas that still appeal to working in financial aid.
Sure. I would think that you would get to know particular students over the course of their time here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yep. Right. And you get, like, the parents that call you consistently every semester of, like, hey, I just have another question. Or not as much here, but in my previous position, I was the frontline staff, so I sat right at the front desk. So parents just knew me, and they would bring me presents sometimes, which is always nice.
Yeah.
Never hurts to butter up your financial aid counselor. We like that. So
Yeah.
But yeah, you get a lot of the hand-holding, the one-on-one conversation with parents, along with a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, too.
Now, you guys, and when I say you guys, I mean the scholarship and financial aid team.
Right.
You make presentations at, you talked about the 55 that you're doing in the community. You're also a key part of the new student orientation.
Correct.
What are you talking to new students about during that orientation process?
Oh, sure. We talk them through how to navigate through SOLAR so that they know where to look for their financial aid information in their bill. We talk about looking at how much they were offered versus how much they're going to be billed so that they don't borrow more than what they need to.
Okay.
So we do talk about borrowing responsibly and the importance of doing that. Besides talking to the students, we also talk to parents. So we talk through the same stuff with parents so that if their student comes back and says, well, I didn't know, the parent can say, well, yes, you did, because I got the same speech at orientation. So talking parents through some of those things, payment plans, all that kind of good stuff.
Right. And I know that this has changed over the years, but there are some, get on to the regulations again, there are some regulations about how much information the university can share with parents when we're talking about a student who is of age and you're sharing that information.
Yes.
How does that play into what you guys do?
Oh, it can be really challenging. So that is called FERPA, the Federal Educational Rights to Privacy Act, I believe.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. I never get the A right. But it basically what it is it's to protect the privacy of students, because otherwise anyone could call our office and say, hey, what classroom is Joey in right now? I need to drop something off for him. And that's not
right.
That's not safe.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Families can sign an information release form that allows us to talk to parents or whoever about whatever they want us to talk to about, like billing, things like that. So that can be challenging, though, if the student hasn't done it yet and the parent calls saying, hey, I want to take out a loan, I need to know how much to take, and we can't tell them anything. So they never signed a release, so I can't tell you what the bill is or how much to borrow.
I know this from some of the conversations that I've been in with you here at UW Parkside. If you were in charge for a day at the federal level, here we go. What are some of the things that right now you think are being done well in the student interest? What are some of the things that you would look at and say, here are reasons that I would make some adjustments on what's going on in terms of...
How long do we have, John?
looking over there, yeah, we've got some time. We've got some time, yeah.
I am very happy and surprised that we've continued to see grants go up. I think we all felt that as the economy, you know, the economy has rebounded a bit, but like interest rates and things like that have gone up, and we just kind of all assumed that grants and stuff would start to either stay level or go down, but they've continued to go up. Not significantly, but they've gone up. So that's something that I think is really great. I think that the Department of Ed is working really hard to try to create policy that is beneficial to students, but I don't really feel they've always implemented some of them well. The perfect example is public service loan forgiveness. I'm sure everyone has heard of that in the news, I would think. And how it's supposed to work is that if you work in a public service field and you've been paying on your loans, after a certain time frame, any remaining debt you have will be forgiven and you won't have to repay it. And it was created to try to help people who are working in fields that are just historically underpaid. So things like social work, that's the big one that they always use as the example. So that's the first thing that pops in my head. But, you know, our job, we work for a nonprofit. I'm considered a public service employee, so technically I should qualify. But there's all these rules and barriers that make it that very few people will actually qualify for this program. And that's a shame, because there are a lot of people that work really hard but aren't paid these high salaries but still had to take out significant debt to be able to afford it. So that's one that I really think they should look at. And the bigger downside of it, in my opinion, is that they really advertised it a lot. And so a lot of students got the impression that they would qualify and may have borrowed more than they would have, not realizing that they won't qualify for forgiveness later. And I only know that because we had students say that to us, like, oh, they'll be forgiven, it'll be fine. But that's not true. So
I'm going into public service. But that doesn't particularly qualify.
And regardless, the student would have to make 10 years worth of repayment on it. And even that wasn't really advertised. So it's just this assumption of, well, I'm going to be in public service, it'll be forgiven. And that's not the case.
So we've only been a week into the Parkside Promise Plus. But from some of the statistics that my team have shared on social media, the response to it has been pretty strong for for a program that has just been announced. What are some of the questions that your team has received, or what are people interested in about Parkside Promise Plus?
We've had both positive and not positive comments. The current students are, feeling like they missed out. And we have in our office tried to reach out to anyone who commented on the Facebook if they're a current student, or if they emailed our office saying, hey, this isn't fair, why didn't I qualify, whatever, to see, A, if there is anything we can do for them, which sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't, and to just answer any questions they have, because, I get that. I'm sure everyone would want to qualify for it. Why wouldn't you? Sure. So just kind of explaining how it works and being understanding about that. The most common questions we're getting from off campus, though, are things like, what if I don't have the 2.5 GPA when I'm admitted? Can I appeal later? So, I had a situation in high school and my GPA isn't that great. Will I still be able to qualify? Or what if I'm just above the cutoff point? What does that look like? So we've been doing some answering of those kind of questions, but mainly what we're hearing from is current students at this point, which doesn't totally surprise me since we're not admissions. I think admissions is fielding more of those, so good for them.
Not sure if this is will be a good question or will apply, but does your office get involved with active duty and veteran students in terms of some of their benefits coming from their military service?
Not really. We do get students who, if they qualify for Wisconsin Vets benefits, we don't do any of the certification of it or anything like that, but it does impact their financial aid eligibility. But any federal stuff doesn't go through us.
So if someone has a question, a active duty person or a veteran, and they were to contact you, What advice do you give them, or who do you advise that they talk to?
We would probably send them to Brad. And he's new, so I can't.
Bailing. Behling. Brad Bailing.
Yeah, we would send them to him to answer any kind of questions that they may have, if it's about any kind of benefits, certification, things like that.
Sure. And what is your relationship with, and not just you personally, but again, scholarship and financial aid team, with the admissions office? How do you guys work together?
Oh, we have to work together a ton. So, we present at a lot of admissions events. So they call us pretty frequently to say, hey, we've got this group of students in, can you come in? Besides that, working with them on, hey, we have a student in our office that has a question about XYZ. Can you kind of walk us through it, or can we send them over there so that you can help them? So we work with them a lot in that aspect. We also do training with all of the new admissions counselors, just to give them kind of a general idea of what sort of questions they may hear from students. Not that we want them to be financial aid professionals, but just so that they're not, if we're all busy, they can answer the basic stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because we're sitting here just a few minutes away from being in a different state in Illinois, how does the in-state, out-of-state, how does that change how you're advising, or what's maybe available to students?
Oh, sure. So if a student's coming from anywhere besides Wisconsin, they don't qualify for any state benefits. So obviously they wouldn't get anything from Wisconsin since they're not from here. But Illinois has the MAP grant, the Monetary Award Program. That doesn't transfer into this state because, again, they're not staying in their home state. So we can evaluate what kind of federal aid they may qualify for. And then we also have a scholarship program for those students that looks at GPA that they're bringing in. So as long as they have a 3.0 or above, they can qualify for a scholarship that'll help reduce their tuition rate down to be a little bit more affordable. Still not quite the in-state rate, but brings it down quite a bit to make it a better deal than what they would get at pretty much any Illinois school. The big one being NIU, it's still more affordable than NIU would be.
Right. Yeah. And transfer students coming in, whether they're coming in from College of Lake County, one of the larger feeder schools in northeastern Illinois, or MATC or Gateway Technical College, are there different rules or scenarios for financial aid for a transfer student, or are they viewed, doesn't it make any difference whether it's a full-time or first-time student, first-time full-time or transfer?
The biggest thing with transfer students is knowing how much they've already used. There are limits to federal aid that students can receive. So there's limits to loans, and there's limits to grants even. So when we get transfer students, it's looking at, all right, how much loan did you use at whatever institution you're transferring from, so that they have a better idea of how much they have left. So for loans, it's limited to $57,500, which seems like a lot. But when you have an adult student who maybe started in this certificate and then went to this associates and then tried this certificate, sometimes they are getting pretty close to that limit. So then we have to have a more in-depth conversation with them of, all right, you've got $20,000 left and you have 2 years. Let's do some math and figure out how we can budget this so that we're sure that you get to graduation.
Sure. And that's the point, right? How do you help that student not just be able to get in, but be able to get through and successfully graduate?
And that's one of those things we work with admissions on, too. So the transfer admissions counselors, if they see someone who has a lot of transfer credit, they've been instructed to have them come and talk to us, especially if they say they want financial aid, so that we can all double check and make sure that when they come in, it's not going to be like, okay, you get $2,000 and you have 3 years left, so that they know what to expect and have realistic ideas of what it's going to look like cost-wise.
Yeah. Well, it's been very enjoyable talking to you, Christina, today about scholarships and financial aid. It's an important topic because it certainly is what helps students not only see the possibility but also realize the dream and getting their degree. Today on Parkside Today, we've been joined by Christina Clemens, who is Director of Scholarships and Financial Aid here at UW-Parkside. We've talked about the Parkside Promise Plus. We've talked about transfer students, grants, and loans. And Christina, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.